Welcome to the Down and Out Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Schlecht. Today, John Hamm is on the podcast, and we're trying to sort through more injuries. Serge Ibaka having some knee soreness that apparently needs to be addressed. There's like a surgery or something happening that's not good. John, why is this happening to us again?
I just don't know, man.
Pull yourself together, John Hamm.
I don't. That's the only words I can form right now. Quite honestly, like, my goodness, what in the world? I mean, I feel like that dude in the Leave Britney Alone video. Just leave the Thunder alone. Just let us play basketball. Oh, my goodness,
this is insanity.
Yeah,
we have a couple Twitter questions that we can start off with. One is, are we cursed? This is from Ian Shug.
Yeah, Shugs.
What's up, Shugs?
Hey.
Yes, the answer is yes.
Apparently so. That's the only logical explanation for it.
And then a great follow-up question from @poison_pennies. Will I ever find happiness? Probably not, Greg.
No. Definitely not Greg.
Not today,
other
Greg.
People, perhaps. There is hope for some people, not Greg.
Yes. Sorry, Greg. Give up. Okay, so we don't really know that much about this yet. Except for that he's going to New York to see a specialist. I've seen the words clean out on Twitter. Like, what are they cleaning out, though?
Yeah, you know, I am a Google PhD. I don't have an actual PhD. Sometimes I feel like I could clep through med school, because every time I come down with like a minor such and such, I always go to see if it's cancer. So, you know, I'm very quick to go and Google all these medical conditions. What cleanup kind of seemed to refer to, like, there's probably some swelling. And what I do know from personal experience is that if you're draining just fluid off the knee, that's okay. If you drain blood, that's a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like when I tore my ACL in high school and they drained blood, that should have been a clue that, oh, this guy has a torn ACL. So it seems to be that there's some irritating condition in the knee. Could be, you know, some loose cartilage. Could be just something that needs to be flushed out. The encouraging thing, and again, we don't know until they get in and have a look. It doesn't sound like, you know, it's like season ending. Who knows? He might be out the rest of the regular season, but I don't think that means that the rest of the season is done for him. I don't think. We'll see.
Well, I guess the positive thing is that we have tons of big guys now.
Yes.
And that big guys that can actually score.
Yes.
Because we were for a while flooded with big guys who were just mean bodies, and that was about it.
Yeah, so like last year, you know, the Thunder were not well equipped to deal with a sudden absence by Ibaka.
Right.
You know, and they kind of had to scramble in the playoffs, and Nick Collison just, you know, wasn't effective playing Serge's role. That, you know, Scott Brooks had even tried to play Perkins and Adams side by side for a few stretches.
Woof.
Yeah. And with a lot of, you know, KD at the four, and granted, that's not a luxury the team has right now. Yes, they are more able to sustain an absence right now than they've ever been. So that is encouraging, and that was by design. You know, at the trade deadline, they made some of these trades, and after years of hearing this team won't pay the luxury tax, they just won't pay the tax, they're cheap, they wind up in tax territory, and I heard people say, well, why didn't they trade Lamb? Why didn't they deal Novak? Why are they in the luxury tax? For this reason. They're willing to pay for the depth because of all the injuries they've had this season to get through it, and they didn't want to sacrifice any of that end-of-the-bench depth that they may need.
Yeah, and the emergence of Mitch McGarry as a player is a great thing, especially now, because really he was a luxury, you know, that Scott Brooks had to use off the bench as a guy who just brought energy, and he used him against the Clippers a bunch in the second half because they couldn't get anything going.
Right.
And now he's going to be a role player.
And think about this. How cool is it when you're like 10th, 11th, 12th man is Mitch McGarry? I mean, if this happens to the Clippers, you know, they're rolling out Epke Udoh.
Yeah, man.
Nothing against Udoh, but, you know, Mitch is has got a little bit more going for him at the moment. So, yeah, the Thunder built up this quality depth even at the end of the bench that, you know, we haven't even got to Perry Jones yet, who used to be the fill-in guy.
Exactly.
Over the past few years. So, like, he's still there if needed. And
he had a 30-point game this year.
He had a 30-point game this year. So he's a little bit of a trick-or-treat type guy.
Yeah.
You never know exactly what you're going to get. But, hey, I mean, at least he's a NBA player that, you know, if you had to dig down that deep, it wouldn't be, you know, the worst thing to have to play him for a few minutes.
Yeah, and now that Grant Jarrett's not on this team anymore, there are no non-NBA players on the Thunder.
Correct. Yes, this is true. Even Steve Novak will come out and rip some threes.
Yeah.
So
I'm excited to see him play offense.
I am too. You know, I talked to a guy in Utah right after that trade went down, because I was mostly interested about Cantor, of course, and kind of his situation. But we talked about Novak.
Yeah.
And the first things that came out about, just like, he's a great guy. He's a great locker room guy. He's a great interview. He can go through 10 DNPs and he's still just, you know, just an awesome guy. And then you'll throw him out, you know, for a stretch, and he'll just rain threes, and he'll give you some production when you badly need it. So it's going to be nice having that luxury there now that the his appendicitis is apparently taken care of, because he had to suffer an injury as well. That'll be a nice luxury to have.
Yeah, my assumption going forward is that they're going to start Adams and Cantor together. That worked really well against Chicago. Cantor had 9 offensive rebounds.
Oh, he was beasting.
9. Yeah. That was, I mean, he was incredible. I mean, he struggles defensively, like, we understand that. But to have a guy that can post up and post up good post defenders, guys that have defended people in the finals, and been able to score on them pretty easily, it's something that we've never seen before, and I'm still pretty in awe of it. I'm in awe of a big man that has good footwork and that can finish around the rim at ease. It's, I mean, and Cantor's, what, did he turn 23 yet?
I don't think so. I think he's still 22.
That's insane.
Yeah, and, you know, like, I went back and picked out a few games that the Jazz played this year with Cantor and just kind of watched a little bit how they used him. They used him as like a stretch four, basically. There were some sets where they would come down court and Cantor is lined up in the corner, like at the three-point line. And because they needed the spacing for Derek Favors to do his work, and this was what Quinn Snyder wanted to implement. And I think that was a lot of Cantor's frustration.
Yeah.
And if you'll notice, I don't think he's attempted a single three-pointer since he came to Oklahoma City.
No.
They want him around the basket. I think that's the role he wants to play. And clearly he's better off in that situation. But in Utah, with Favors there, it just didn't really make sense, you know, to give him that role instead of Favors. So, it's been a welcome addition to this Thunder team, no doubt.
Yeah, and he's a full-time four there. I mean, he was, you know, high post. He was at three-point line, like you said. And, you know, they were trying to fit him into Quinn Snyder's system. You know, it looks a lot like the Atlanta Hawks. They want him to kind of be more Paul Millsap than Enes Kanter, really, and stretch him out and see what he can do, because he's super skilled and has great touch. So, I mean, I think that they just thought, you know, let's just stretch this guy out. But he was pretty unhappy. And since then, the Jazz have taken off, man. They're one of the best defensive teams in the league at this point, and really all they're missing is a good guard.
Man, Utah is – I'm keeping my eye on that team. It reminds me a little bit, not necessarily in terms of, you know, talent depth, but it reminds me a little bit of the Thunder from a few years ago.
Yeah.
You've got a number of young guys that have room to grow that are on cheap rookie deals. They've got a lot of cap room coming up that they can use to fill in those gaps that you mentioned, or buy more assets to, you know, get those guys later. Mm-hmm. I really like what Utah's building, and, you know, Cantor was in a bit of a Reggie Jackson situation in Utah. He wasn't happy and he didn't want to be there long term. And I've heard, you know, some people say that he powdered his way out and things like that. And he probably did, much like Reggie did here. And you know, it worked out for both parties. And sometimes that's what you got to hope for in a deal, is that, you know, everyone kind of benefits. And the Jazz, they benefited just by subtracting him off the team, basically.
Yeah. So. And he's been like the best case scenario of himself for OKC, because
yes.
David Locke, who does he's their radio voice. I heard a few podcasts that he did, and he said, "Here's what I expect from Enes Kanter: inconsistency, several DNPs for the rest of the season." And he said that he could be one of three guys. He said he could be Drew Gooden, he could be Carl Landry, or he could be Zebo. And he said he has no idea which one he's going to be.
Interesting.
So, and that's a guy who watched him play every single game of his career.
Right, right.
But he thought, you know, defensively, this guy just doesn't do what Scott Brooks wants him to do, so mm-hmm. he's probably not going to play him. But that hasn't been the case so far.
No, we don't have to worry about that. I see a lot of what he's saying, except for the DNP portion.
Yeah.
He's not going to get a DNP coach's decision the rest of the way. I don't see any way how.
No, there's no way. And it's kind of disappointing that Ibaka is going to be out. We don't know. I mean, it could be 2 weeks. It could be, I think there's 5 weeks until the playoffs. Mm-hmm. So there's something to keep in mind whenever they give the timeline in the next couple of days, that if he's out 4 weeks, then he's going to have a little bit of time to come back. If he's 2 weeks, they'll be fine. If it's 6 weeks, then there's trouble.
Right.
But I was going to say that it kind of sucks that he's out, because they were kind of tethering him to Kanter to kind of fill in for his defensive liabilities. So,
and now Adams gets that.
Yeah. And, you know, Adams is – he's obviously a very good player and obviously a good defender and really fits well next to Kanter. It was really interesting watching them yesterday.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, clearly he's not the shot blocker that Serge is, and Serge is more of the help defender.
Yeah.
He excels in that area more than man-to-man, and that would be probably the opposite for Adams. But still, at least you can kind of, you know, pick the big man and say Adams is going to guard him, you know, or the mm-hmm. the best post guy, and assign Adams to him and put Kanter on the weaker of the two and probably be just fine. So really interested to see what happens in Dallas tonight, because we talked about possibly adjusting the lineups depending on matchups, and Brooks has mentioned that the starting lineup could be fluid going forward. Mm-hmm. So you're going to Dallas tonight, where Tyson Chandler and Dirk Nowitzki are there. It'll be telling, because my instinct is to start Collison instead of Adams
mm-hmm.
to guard Dirk and to guard the pick and roll.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting if Scott Brooks says, no, I'm going to make them adjust to what we're doing, mm-hmm. and he starts the Thunder Twin Powers instead.
Man. Yeah, that was a question from at Kearney's Corner about the starting lineup changing based on matchups. And
yeah.
Honestly, I have no idea what he's going to do. But I think it would make sense because of the kind of specific personnel the Thunder have now. It wouldn't surprise me to see Nick Collison or McGarry start. Mm-hmm. I think you're right that Collison is probably the better fit to start at four and to guard Dirk, mostly because he's done it for years and years and years.
That too, yeah.
And Mitch McGarry's foot speed just hasn't been what I thought it should be. He tries to run really fast up and down the court.
I was going to say, unless he's doing a 90-foot dash, yeah. then he can accomplish that in about 3 seconds.
Exactly.
Yeah, so laterally, not so much.
Right, exactly. let's go to some Twitter questions that we have. This one's from at Brian Nix. Is there a Grantland screening of Son of Congo in New York this week? I don't believe so.
I don't believe
And this was, I actually got a text message from one of my friends before the Serge Ibaka injury leaked, and he was like, "Do you think he's really hurt, or is this just have to do with his documentary?" And I didn't get a chance to answer it before ESPN put out that alert that he was going to have surgery. But I mean, do you have a problem with him promoting this movie while he's hurt?
No, not at all. I mean, so he's missed time due to knee soreness, which we now know is probably some swelling. He wasn't on bed rest Right. He wasn't on IV fluids. He wasn't checked into a hospital. He didn't, you know, violate doctor's orders and go travel. And if the knee surgery, if the knee injury was terribly bad, I don't believe the team would have cleared him, you know, to go fulfill this obligation that he likely made months in advance. By the way. You know, I highly doubt they got down there and said, "Hey, here's South by Southwest. Would you like to come down tonight?" This was probably booked quite a bit in advance, and now we know that, you know, that there was some seriousness behind this knee injury. So, you know, again, he wasn't on bed rest. He was just down there to answer some questions. The worst, he walked around on a knee with some fluid built up on it. Not a big deal.
No, it's really not. And I don't think that we should be upset with him about promoting a documentary that is about him. If I was a basketball player and had a movie about myself, heck yeah, I'm going to South by Southwest.
Yeah, I would. And especially if it's one that, you know, in the case of, it's going to shed a lot of light on life and where he comes from.
Yes.
Yes, this is something he should be extremely proud of and want to get as much exposure for it as possible. Yeah. So, at all.
It's really important. And the Thunder, with everything that's happened this season, are going to be super cautious with everybody. And they are not going to let somebody go do something reckless. And, you know, he's not riding a motor scooter down to Austin this week. So chill out.
Yeah. It's all good. And I know sometimes that's human nature, just to kind of gravitate towards finding, you know, negativity in these things. And people did this, like when KD played in the All-Star game. And it's, you know, again, not that big of a deal. And you've got to have flexibility with your people, right? It's just like with any employer, you've got to manage that. And you know, clearly he could not go down to South by Southwest and, you know, play a charity one-on-one game with anybody, but you can have him go down and, again, do the Q&As and all that sort of stuff. So people are just a little, I think, oversensitive right now because of all the injuries that have mounted this season.
I mean, maybe they shouldn't have had him talk to Bill Simmons, but everything beyond that's fine.
That's a whole other story. Yeah. Yeah. Come on, Serge. I thought you knew better.
Next question is from OG JDW, Jamie Don Wheat. Has there ever been an NBA champion with a season this ridden with injuries?
Wow. My first instinct is to say that this is unprecedented.
Yeah.
In NBA history. Therefore, no. And, you know, quite some time ago, like, I've always been the type of guy that's always been a kind of a historian, you know, go find an example of something that's happened in the past to add some color to what's going on now. I can find no other scenario like this.
No.
To where I can go back and say, well, hey, in 1946, you know, like, that really matters, you know?
Yeah.
There have been some NBA champions that have dealt with some injuries along the way. Even last year's San Antonio team, they didn't just rest guys. I mean, they lost Kawhi Leonard for a little bit. They lost Tony Parker for a stretch. I think I'm blanking out on the big man's name. Splitter, that's his name.
Yeah. Splitter's been struggling with injuries for a while. Even this year, he's really struggled. But
yeah. So, you know, the Spurs dealt with a little bit of that, but again, they had a deep roster and they could adapt to that without any issue. The Lakers, I think, dealt with that a little bit at the turn of the century, if I'm not mistaken. They had a year where Kobe was kind of in and out of the lineup and Shaq had his annual injury. And
yeah.
Derek Fisher, I think, missed all but 20 games, and Ron Harper was hurt. You know, and they went on to win, you know, the title that year. And but
the Mavs, when they won the title, and
Caron Butler
was out. Yeah.
Yeah. Lost him midseason.
And one of the Lakers championships, Kobe had broken his ring finger or his pinky, and he had to, like, tether two of his fingers together on a shooting hand.
Right. Yeah.
There's like these little things, but to the extent of what the Thunder have gone through.
Right. The quality of player that has missed games. This isn't like, you know, the 15th male, like, you know, not Grant and Jared had ankle surgery and missed significant time. No, the league's MVP is going to play probably less than half of the season.
Yeah.
Getting Kevin Durant. And then, just go on down the list. We could spend an hour detailing every injury they've had this season. It's insane. So, yeah. You know, so the short answer to the question is no, not that I can think of. Has there ever been an NBA champion that's dealt with injuries to this extent? Just because it hasn't happened before.
Right. Yeah, it's and I mean, I think the Thunder still have a good shot, just as long as Ibaka can come back and Durant's, you know, able to play 35 to 40 minutes a game. I think that they'll be fine. And another thing, back to Serge Ibaka, if Durant can come back within the week, Durant plays power forward a lot.
Right.
So he's going to soak up some of those minutes as well. So we'll get to see them kind of run out some Durant, Cantor, Durant, Adams lineups that will be interesting to see. You know what? I forgot what it's like to watch Kevin Durant play basketball. Totally forgot.
I know. It's totally sad. And it's even more of a bummer.
It is. Okay, this is from at Mikey Berra. Amos, Anthony Morrow's defensive rating is not that bad. Why are we still playing him from the bench?
Interesting. The first thing I thought of is dating back to last season when ESPN released these real plus minus ratings, and Nick Collison was like in the top five, if I'm not mistaken,
right,
of real plus minus, and it kind of stirred up this conversation of, oh, should he be playing 30 minutes a game or something? Mm-hmm. No, he was really effective in the time that he played in short minutes, and that was, you know, you run into a point of diminishing returns if you play him more than that, essentially. Mm-hmm. I feel that same way about Morrow, that we get really excited at the things that he does, but I feel like coming off the bench and doing it the way that he's doing it is where he's most effective.
Yeah.
And I understand, you know, kind of the push to want to make him a starter because of that, or just because you have something against Andre Robertson where you feel like Morrow needs to be the starter. So, yeah, I think you're seeing really good production out of Anthony Morrow because he's in the role he's in, and that he may actually be less effective if you shift that role around and then put him in the starting lineup and then have him chasing around the likes of a James Harden or Klay Thompson or who have you. So probably best to stick with where he's at right now and just keep running that train.
I totally agree. You know, I see his... Some of his numbers aren't that bad defensively. Like, his defensive win shares, I think, are a net positive. But then, like, you look at defensive box score plus minus, and he's a minus for that. I think he's a minus 1.7, which is worse than Waiters, Cantor, Jeremy Lamb, Perry Jones.
Right.
He's a limited guy. He's not very athletic. And he's just not a guy that you want to throw out there on the best guy. And honestly, we don't want to be throwing Westbrook on the best guy because the amount of energy that he expends at the offensive end is just so great that Robertson's going to stay that guy. Let's just accept it and let's move forward because he's going to be the starting shooting guard from here on out. And there's no reason to debate it. He's a good defender. Is he going to airball shots? Yes. Is he going to miss free throws? Yes. Is he going to make dumb plays and fumble the ball? Yes, he will. He's going to do all these things, but he's going to defend the best player on the other team, and that's something that the Thunder really need at that position.
And the funny thing to me is that the fans will come out against Robertson whenever he does airball a three-point shot or when he does airball a free throw. But if a Thunder player on the defensive end of the court just does a complete ole on defense,
yeah,
no one screams for him to come out. I keep hearing more Mitch McGarry, you know, and like, he's not there defensively. He does some really, really good things out there, but defensively, man, he lets a lot of air through. So
yeah, he does. And a lot of people like mistake hustle for being a good defender.
Right.
McGarry hustles like no other, but his foot speed's not there. He doesn't really know what he's doing defensively yet, and it's apparent to me, why, whenever this team is fully healthy, why he shouldn't play. And you know, Robertson is a young player, but he's got a lot of things figured out on the defensive end already, and he's going to play 10 to 20 minutes a game, sometimes more, sometimes less, and we just got to deal with it.
Yeah, until the playoffs come around, and if they find themselves in a situation where he is clearly impacting the team,
yeah,
you know, then Brooks has shown that he's willing to make the switch, and it would probably be waiters at that point. Mm-hmm. I would think.
Yeah,
I think that's probably more the conversation that you want to have is should Waiters or Roberson be starting, and there are people that are in favor of neither of these players.
Right.
It's fascinating to me how Roberson has become the new Perkin and Waiters has become the new Cephalosha.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it is. The problem with the shooting guard position is there's no perfect guy. And there's nobody that you can just call upon and be like, this is the guy, like, what are we doing? Like, they're all super flawed. Mm-hmm. And something that was mentioned in a podcast last week that really the Thunder shouldn't be banking on any of these guys. Like, they need to keep looking. Like, they need to keep looking and find another guy. And if, I mean, all these guys are pretty disposable, in my opinion, and I hope the Thunder view them that way too, because I don't believe any of them are the real answer for their shooting guard position.
Yeah, and I clearly they believe element process. And with Roberson, I think you're hoping to turn him into a new age Bruce Bowen eventually.
Yeah.
You know, with who can also offensive rebound real well. But, you know, we also have to keep in mind how young these guys are. So as much as like Jeremy Lamb, for example, mm-hmm. Is he 23 yet? I think he may still be 22.
I think he is. I'll fact check that. But I think that he's still 22.
And so, granted, there's a lot of NBA players who have already exploded by that age and proven themselves, but not every player does by that age. Mm-hmm. So there may still be something to be found if he could fix his defensive issues, which have been discussed here and elsewhere. In other words, they may still be able to turn something around there. Waiters, you know, they're maybe. I don't know. He's done some decent things. He does some things well that a lot of fans don't acknowledge. He does a lot of things that are really bad.
Yeah.
But granted, they're all pretty flawed.
Yeah. And with Waiters, basically, I mean, the real job with Waiters is turn this guy into a role player. Like, get him out of his I'm a superstar mentality, which I'm not sure is possible.
Right.
I'm not sure that it's possible. And some of that's a good thing, but the Thunder really need, like, I just want them to say, I want you to watch tape of Wes Matthews for the next, you know, 24 hours, and then I want you to be Wes Matthews. Like, Wes Matthews, whenever I think of, like, the best that the Thunder could do at the shooting guard position as far as a role, like, Wes Matthews is that guy, period.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that would be fantastic. And notice how Wes Matthews does not take any step back, fade away, long twos.
Right.
So let's make note of that first and then move on.
Yeah, because Waiters can be super gritty on the defensive end.
Yes.
And he can strip. Like, I've seen him strip guys that are just dribbling right in front of him, and there's not a lot of guys that can do that.
Yeah.
So he's got some skill defensively, but he just has no discipline.
Right.
He's not a disciplined player, and he really just needs to learn how to play the game, but he's got tons of tools.
Yes, he does. But, you know, if that's not going to pan out, they're going to have to look elsewhere to address that position down the road.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if they did, and it wouldn't surprise me if Deion actually developed into a better player. I mean, he may trend more to being a Jamal Crawford type of player, but he still has a lot to change in his game.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see, other Twitter questions. Okay, this is from Daniel Wojo. If MJ or any of the other all-time greats was Russell Westbrook or Kevin Durant in this situation, would we still say we can't win a title without Ibaka?
So the one thing that Daniel may be overlooking here is the value of those role players that we've been talking about. Because as great as any great NBA player is, you know, you've got to have guys that step up and do certain things. Is the star player can only do so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's where Ibaka has proven his season in the playoffs, and we've seen the value of having guys like Tahoe and Park over the years, and moving forward Adams and whoever else comes down the pipeline. So and look, all these great players had their own role players that helped them win as well. Dallas, that we mentioned a few just a little bit earlier, talking about how Caron Butler was lost partway through that season. They were able to adapt. They picked up Peja Stojakovic to come in and somewhat kind of fill that spot. But they had Sean Marion on hand that they could slide into the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. So, they had some depth to account for that. That's probably about the closest comparison I can think of.
Yeah, and some people forget Brian Cardinal played on that team.
The custodian.
Quite a bit in the playoffs, and he was...
Yes, he did.
He's an afterthought.
And
the thing is, like, we have plenty of guys that can step up on this team to get them into the playoffs. Like, I'm honestly not worried about them getting into the playoffs at this point. But to win a title, it's going to be tough without Ibaka.
Definitely. Especially when you look at who you got to get through in the West, and as much potential as that Cantor Adams lineup shows, they're going to have Ibaka. Just don't see any way around it.
Yeah, and it all kind of goes back to a question that we talked about earlier. Is Brooks going to adjust to what the other team's doing, or vice versa? And I think playing the Warriors will really tell that, especially if Ibaka can't go.
Right.
What's he going to do? Because they're going to start Draymond Green at the four.
Yes.
And then are you going to go just say, you know what, you're going to have to deal with Enes Kanter in the post, Draymond. Mm-hmm. And I think that they could just dump it to him over and over again and get Green in foul trouble. And then are you going to force them to have to start another big? Or is he just going to start small with Durant at the four, next to Cantor and next to Adams? I don't know. It's just really interesting. I think Brooks has a lot of pieces to play with, and I'm not totally sure that he's comfortable with that, because I think he's more comfortable with just, I know who my starting lineup is, I know what we're going to do, and we're just going to go do it. And now, he's got his job responsibility seem to be ticking up more and more as the season goes on.
Yeah, definitely. This is kind of new ground for him, because, like you said, it's always been, here's my starting five. He's had the same starting five for, what, 3+ years?
Yeah.
Basically, since Perkins came over, and the only decisions he really had to make is, if someone misses a game, who starts in their place?
Right.
And the bench has been mostly the same bench throughout the season, once it's, shaken itself out. But now, this whole idea of throwing out different lineups, which is not a bad option to have. I mean, there's been NBA champions that have shuffled up their lineups throughout the playoffs, as it dictates, and had great success with that. So it's a valuable tool to have available.
Yeah, the last champion Lakers kind of had a similar thing with their bigs, where they had Lamar Odom and Pau Gasol and Andrew Bynum, mm-hmm. and they had to kind of shuffle those guys around and find the combination that worked against certain teams. So
San Antonio, having D'Al sometimes,
Yeah, exactly,
slide him in instead of Splitter, and
same situation. So it's a good thing to have all these pieces. Is Scott Brooks the right coach to put these pieces in the right place? I think that is yet to be seen. He hasn't really had an opportunity to prove himself there yet. But he has been a guy that can make adjustments that have worked in the past. Maybe not, obviously not to a championship, but I think that we need to give Brooks a little more leash than we do.
Oh, definitely. And I know that, an NBA title is, for some people, it's title or bust. I truly feel like if you can get to the Final Four in the NBA, you get to the conference finals, at that point, any of the four teams could win the title that season. just depending on matchups, you might have another team that is inferior talent wise, but they just happen to have the right formula that's better than the other team. You know, think about when Orlando beat Cleveland a few years ago.
Yep.
That shouldn't have happened.
Yep.
You know, Cleveland had a 66 win team, I think, that year. And but Orlando had they had a BED'd up Rashard Lewis, as it turned out. But, still, you know, they provided a matchup that Cleveland couldn't match up against, and you know, they advanced. And so get to the conference finals. If you can get to the Final Four, pretty much anything can happen at that point. And the Thunder have gotten themselves in position to get to that point and beyond. And, you know, last season it didn't break out for them, and you know, now that we're cut off for them again this year as well.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that in college basketball that getting to the Final Four, like, wow, like, you've done it. Like, you've really done something.
Right.
And in NBA, it's like a big deal. Like, why did you lose to San Antonio? Like, why did, you know? I mean, it's funny.
It's the Ricky Bobby mentality. If he ain't first, you're last.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, but, man, we should understand right now, as Thunder fans, being relatively new to the NBA, it's really difficult to win the title.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
Super difficult. And you really don't understand until you follow a team through 82 regular season games and potentially four rounds of playoffs year after year after year.
Yeah.
To really get an appreciation for, like, wow, this is really difficult to do. So.
Yeah, you can have super talent. Like, there's been so many talented teams that have just that never won a title. That
yep.
just never happened for him. Like those 90s, early 90s Suns were incredible.
Yes.
And the late 90s Jazz were fantastic teams. Early 2000s Kings. I mean, just...
The Pacers and the Knicks in the 90s.
Yeah.
Both had really good teams. They just had Michael Jordan in their way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, same thing with Sacramento, as you mentioned. They had Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant in their way. So, and the Thunder are set up to be like that. I mean, Westbrook and Durant is about the closest I've seen to Kobe and Shaq. I keep thinking that's more of an apt comparison. Some people go back to Jordan and Pippen. I don't think that's really, really apt. It feels to me more like Kobe and Shaq, just two dominant guys.
Yeah.
And pick your poison. Which one do you want to guard? Which one do you want to focus on? The other one will slaughter you instead. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're set up to be that way. Just got to get the medical bills paid.
Oh, man. The Thunder are just due just to be healthy for the playoffs.
I would think if we could get this out of the way now.
Oh. And I've said that, and people say that, but the funny thing is that's not how this works.
Yeah.
And maybe some other teams will catch the injury bug and give us some luck. Maybe the Warriors will catch an injury bug in the first round, and you know, I mean, like, I don't
know. You never know.
You don't know. When Serge Ibaka went down against the Clippers, I mean, it's just, I don't know. Injuries are so much of what it takes to become an NBA championship. If you can't,
yeah.
I mean, it's luck, it's talent, it's all those things just crammed into one, and the Thunder have just not had it all at once.
Right. And you mentioned luck, and I know some people want to discount that, but it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, there is luck in getting the number two pick in a draft and the best player falling to you, as happened in 2007. There's luck in drafting a guy fourth overall, so people think you overdrafted him, and he turns out to be a top five player in the league.
Yeah.
There's luck in taking, you know, a potential MVP candidate, like they did in 2009 with James Harden. And sometimes there's unfortunate luck, like when the collective bargaining agreement changes on you midstream and you have to, you know, you're in a situation where you can't treat that player like you did the previous two guys and he wants out.
Yeah.
You know, it goes both ways, but luck is that it's totally there, and there's just no way to account for that or throw that as a variable equation.
Yeah, and it's certainly a part. You just look back through NBA history, and it's there. It's there.
Yeah.
Well, John, thanks for coming on the podcast. We hope that Serge Ibaka's knee swelling and clean outs and all these things are going to be a short sit out, and he'll be back soon, but we don't know, so we'll see. But thanks for coming on the podcast, and we'll talk to you again when things are a little bit less depressing.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Thanks for listening to the Down to Dunk podcast. You can find us at dailythunder.com and downtodunk.com. Follow us on Twitter at DTD Podcast and ask us Twitter questions every Wednesday. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a 5-star iTunes review, and your review will be read on the next podcast. Thanks for listening.